From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Our House Democratic Caucus just concluded. It is our decision that more work needs to be done on our budget proposal, so we will not be voting today, but as soon as we return to Chicago, there will be continual hearings and work throughout the coming weeks to reach a final conclusion.
We've seen a complete dereliction of duty by the majority in the General Assembly. Please, members of the General Assembly in the majority, do not travel around the state holding sham hearings about a balanced budget.
Some of our people are concerned. Having observed how the governor worked with the Senate Democrats, where he would negotiate, then back away, negotiate, back and away, there's a concern. They just don't have a high level of confidence in how the governor has conducted himself.
The primary pro-business position is one of sustainability and predictability, right? That means a balanced budget, a budget that businesses know will be in place going forward so that they can build their business model around it. But in addition to that, I agree with the governor that we need those business reforms that he's been arguing for 2 years.
Now is the time, through today and through the end of next month, for us to build bridges and not burn them.
Well, no state budget again. Lawmakers and the governor unable to reach agreement as the spring session deadline came and went. What's next? We're going to talk about the budget impasse and where things may be headed. Coming up on State Week today in Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie directs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And in our Statehouse Bureau, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio's Statehouse reporter, and Doug Finke with the State Journal Register joins us. Doug, good to have you back on again.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, Doug, I'm going to start with you. I guess the inability to pass a full state budget, that's become the new normal in Illinois.
Pretty much, and it's kind of what your definition of news is. If it's something out of the ordinary, then this doesn't count as news anymore because it's standard practice. The fact of the matter is there are a lot of factors that led to this. The House Democrats had some issues with the components of the tax hike bill that came over from the Senate. They also had some concerns about the level of cuts that were in the spending plan. So at best, what the Senate sent over was going to be tweaked by the House, and then it was going to have to go back to the Senate for their approval. But really the biggest factor in this was that the governor announced that he would flatly veto this thing if it got to his desk. And why in the world would any Democrat want to put their vote on a tax hike bill knowing the thing would never become law anyway, because the House Democrats don't have enough votes to override a veto. So with that threat looming, there was no reason to act at this point.
And Brian, I guess you saw it the same way. I don't want to say it's all the governor's fault, but that certainly seemed to be the trigger that took these negotiations in a different down a different path. And at the end of the day, like we said, here we are without a budget again.
Yeah, we heard from Senate President John Cullerton this morning, was on a Chicago public radio station after the governor had been on, and saying, you know, the Democratic take is we passed the governor's ideas. The governor wanted to change the purchasing and procurement rules in the state of Illinois. We put a bill on his desk to do that. The governor wanted to change the school funding formula. He had a commission to do that. We drafted their ideas into bill form, voted on it, and passed that. They didn't actually send that to his desk. We can get into that later for parliamentary reasons. But, you know, Cullerton says, the governor asked us to do these things. We did them. Did we do every little detail of how he wanted them done? No. But the governor has, repeatedly said it's not good enough for, the reform he thinks Illinois needs, for the changes he wants to make. And he, after the Senate Democrats voted for a budget with tax increases, the state Republican Party went after them. There were robocalls and ads and that sort of thing. And they even started targeting House Democrats in anticipation of that. And that, what we heard at the top of the show, scared some Democrats. They don't want to vote for something that the governor is going to use to bludgeon them over the head with. And so I guess in this case, the governor's right about one thing. The status quo is easier to maintain than changing anything. And as Doug was saying, the new normal, whether it's news or not, to not have a budget is the status quo. And it was easier to just kind of let that situation roll along than to do something bold or courageous and actually, vote one way or the other.
Well, I guess the fact that the legislature, the Democrats, did agree to at least meet the governor part of the way on some of these issues, that should give us hope, I would guess, that maybe they can, work these differences out and something can get done. But yet I don't seem to feel a lot of hope among our panel today. Maybe you guys feel a little differently on that.
I don't have a lot of hope about it because I'm not convinced that anyone is willing to do everything that needs to be done, right? For the governor, it would be, he often uses this phrase, I will go along with tax hikes. He does everything he can to not sort of take ownership of tax increases, even though I think, basically, if you listen to his statements and parse what he says, he acknowledges that you cannot not only balance our current budget, which is $7 to $8 billion out of balance this year, but meet our long-term liabilities, such as the $14.5 billion in overdue bills we owe, and the $130 billion in pension liability. So, is the governor sincere about, putting his name and his signature on a tax hike, even as he's telling constituents, you deserve to not have a tax hike, you deserve to be protected from a tax hike? And then are the Democrats, and well, we know John Cullerton is, but is Speaker Madigan willing to give Rauner a win on any of these issues? Or is he just kind of holding his breath and waiting for January 2019 when in presumably Speaker Madigan's hopes, somebody other than Bruce Rauner will be raising his hand to take the oath of office as governor of Illinois?
And Doug, you're never cynical about state government, I know. So your thought is this is going to keep going as well for the foreseeable future?
I would think so. There's a great deal of distrust on both sides right now, and there's no sign of that easing up. You heard it in Madigan's statement at the top of the show where he said the Democrats have concerns with the way the governor is handling this situation. There's a widespread belief on the part of the Democrats that no matter what they agree to, the governor is going to either demand more or say that what they, as he has with some of these things, that it doesn't go far enough, so it's unacceptable. And unless the two sides start trusting each other more and are more amenable to compromise, no, it's not going to end.
Charlie, you have covered state government for a long time. You've seen people who don't like each other, who maybe don't get along, who just have maybe even some minor differences. In the end, they're able to get something done. They're able to work together. And that doesn't seem to be happening here. As you look ahead, do you see any evidence that these guys can sit down and get something put together?
I think Doug hit at it when he said there's a lack of trust. And to me, a lot of that falls on the governor's shoulders. If he were serious about getting a deal, he wouldn't have his minions in the Republican Party organization, which he's, he bought it, he paid for it, and he has the right to tell them what to do. But if he were serious, he wouldn't be sending out robocalls. He wouldn't be putting stuff online. He wouldn't be having cable TV ads blasting Democrats for raising taxes or for thinking about raising taxes when he himself has admitted we need more revenue. So if I'm serious about negotiating with Doug, I don't go out of my way to badmouth Doug and to talk about him behind his back. I may decide I don't like Doug, which obviously is not the case. We're good friends for many, many years. But you don't go into a negotiation, I wouldn't think, and at the same time be trying to poison the well. And that's maybe the difference. Yeah, there have been a lot of people over the years who didn't get along very well and who differed greatly in their political views, but in the past they were always able to compromise. And it's funny because Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader, was talking about how Democrats for 20 years have been running the state into the ground. I'm paraphrasing here. And I'm thinking to myself, 20 years, this is 2017, 20 years ago, that was 97. Oh, that was Jim Edgar was the governor. Oh, that was Pate Phillip was the president of the Senate. Democrats didn't get control of everything until 2003. So Representative Durkin is weak either in math or in history. But that's the kind of narrative that goes out, and folks who don't pay as close attention to this stuff as we do fall for that nonsense.
Well, here's something that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, and that is if I'm a supporter of the Democratic Party, maybe I'm hoping that there's money for social services, higher education, other things that are there. I would still want to see the Democrats put a budget on the governor's desk and force the governor's hand in some way. They didn't do that. Is that a mistake?
I don't know if you were asking Charlie that, but I'm going to jump in
since
he didn't, and say that I'm very curious about that very point, because I almost think that, you know, the Tribune had a headline this week, which was something along the lines of how the governor kept a tax increase from landing on his desk. And I thought that was a very interesting and insightful way to put it, because in a way, the governor doesn't have to be the one who says, the buck stops here. The governor can say, this is the House Democrats, or as his message consultants told him to say this week, the majority party. He would not say Democrats. He just kept saying majority party, interestingly, but that's I digress. But, you know, now the governor doesn't stop on his desk. He can blame the Democrats in the House for not passing a budget. So when we had the two credit rating agencies downgrade state government this week, he can blame the Democrats. I'm very curious to see what would have happened if House Democrats would have put that on his desk, and then maybe he would veto it, maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he would try to do some sort of a mandatory veto to lessen the impact on taxpayers or something like that. And if he did veto it and it comes back to the House, we know the Senate probably has enough votes to override. The Democrats have supermajorities there. What would have happened in the House? Would you, at that point, this is the best hope Illinois would have had for an actual budget in 2 years, could you have tried to peel off a couple of Republicans at that point who have universities at their districts, in their districts, who have state prisons and other, whose local economies depend on state government more than other parts of the state? That's a question we don't have an answer to right now, and probably won't, because at this point, the Democrats can no longer pass a budget without Republican votes because of the vote threshold change that happened on June 1st.
And, Doug, this gets back to the conspiracy theorists who think that Speaker Madigan doesn't want to see a budget done. He wants to see Rauner have to go into reelection without ever getting a budget, approved, a full budget in the state of Illinois during his term. It certainly seems to go along with that concern that a lot of people have.
Well, that's one concern. I think you also have to weigh that. Does the how badly do the Republicans want a budget done? Because their entire theme that they've been developing is that Madigan is the cause of all this stuff, and the Democrats follow Madigan, so they're the evildoers here. And is that their strategy for holding out until 2018 in the hopes of picking up additional seats and perhaps even control of one of the chambers?
Charlie, where could this go next? We just mentioned the fact there's not a lot of trust out there. Is it just basically that we sit here and say, well, Madigan and Rauner, they can't get along, nobody trusts each other? Is there still a possibility that the rank and file, which it seemed to be happening earlier in the year, could move this ball forward?
Yeah, that's what I've said all along. It's going to take the rank and file. It's going to take Republicans who are willing to stand up to Rauner and say, look, for the sake of my district, I'm going to have to vote for something, for the human services in my district, for the school kids in my district, the universities. I have to vote for something. And similarly, rank-and-file members in the Democratic caucus will be telling the Speaker, we have to do something. And I think the pressure is probably greater on Madigan than it is on Rauner. You know, Rauner lives in a world where none of this stuff affects him. He says, the right stuff about, oh, I feel your pain and 100% and all that kind of nonsense. But he's still holding to this non-budget agenda, property tax freeze, for example, which has nothing to do with funding state government because, as I've said before many times in many venues, the property tax all pays for local government, chiefly schools. So anyway, I think you need the little people, so to speak, in the General Assembly, the rank-and-file members, the backbenchers, what used to be called the Mushroom Caucus because they were kept in the dark and fed horse manure. You need them to go to their leadership and say, look, for the sake of my constituents, let's get a budget in place. Now, the danger, I would think, for the Democrats is we send a budget to the governor, he vetoes out everything except K-12 education, and we limp along while he continues to push his non-economic agenda.
Ryan and Doug, can you talk about the fallout from not getting this budget? We've already seen, I believe, Brian, you reported credit downgrades since the adjournment, the end of the session, at least, on Wednesday that took place. So we're already seeing some impact. What's the other fallout we're expected to see over the next few months?
Well, you mentioned the credit rating downgrades. We also saw this week that Northeastern Illinois University, which had closed several days during its spring semester, announced 180 people were being laid off. There's a union-backed group out there that's opposed to Rounder that did
I believe SIU is also laying some people off.
Oh, SIU. I was going to say there's a union-backed group that said overall they've tallied 1,500 public university layoffs that they lay at the feet of the budget impasse. I think we're going to continue to see human service organizations. There was a heartbreaking story, I think, out of the Peoria Journal Star this week or last week, I lose track, about a social service organization that takes care of kids who have pretty severe mental health problems and, can be suicidal or have just terrible problems. And that one is closing because the state is not paying, and when it does pay, it's so far behind that it's just not sustainable. We've seen drug treatment centers close. There's a real human toll for the people who are who need help because of mental health problems, as I said, or addiction or other things like that. And those stories are going to continue happening without state funding.
And Doug and Brian, I don't want to be flippant about that, but at the same time, we've been seeing a lot of this. We've seen the layoffs. We've heard about the social services. That hasn't seemed to move anybody off the dime. Will it do it this time?
Being cynical about it, I'd have to say, why would you think it's going to be different now? The toll has been mounting for 2 years now, and it hasn't moved anybody yet.
I will say, I mean, the toll is not, it's been mounting. People have not been as willing to sort of express it in some cases, though. We've seen this particularly with universities because they don't want to damage their recruiting prospects. So they kind of try and say, well, we're managing, we're doing okay. At the U of I, which employs all of us on this panel except for Doug, that is true more than other places because they have a lot of other revenue sources other than state aid. But for some of the universities that are more dependent on that, they've been kind of papering over some of these problems. And so maybe there isn't as much. Well, we know from polling that there isn't as much public awareness of this. And I would add, if some of the vendors that have been through their good graces keeping the state of Illinois going, if MJ Kellner, which supplies a lot of food to prisons, decides that, you know what, this is just not worth it for us anymore and decides to cut the state of Illinois off. I don't know. Maybe Doug's right. Maybe even a prison riot would not, garner sympathy in some of the wealthier parts of the state. I'm just not sure anymore, as Doug said. You know, anything that's bad that happens now, both sides can point at the other guy and say it's the big bad governor's fault, it's the big bad speaker's fault, and just dig in further into their positions.
Well, one other thing that to look for, possibly, Comptroller Mendoza has warned that the day is coming soon when the state simply won't have the cash to meet all the court-ordered payments that we're under now. I mean, that's the reason government is kept going, our services have kept going as long as they have, is we've got court orders and consent decrees out there that dictate that certain payments still have to be made despite the lack of a budget. that doesn't guarantee the cash is there. And Mendoza is saying that at some point soon, there is not simply going to be enough cash to make all those court payments. And then I believe their idea is to go back to court and say, here's the situation. What do we do about it? And maybe that triggers something.
And Doug, that's a great point, Doug. I talked to Controller Mendoza this week, and she said even as early as next week, Federal Judge Joan Lefkow in Chicago is expected to rule on these Medicaid providers that want to be put to the front of the line to get their payment. And if that happens, she said, either then or very soon after, she's going to have to decide which court order takes precedence over the other court orders. You know, which court order do I violate by not being able to, because there are just going to be so many demands on the states.
Court orders, but there's also statutory requirements. For example, despite all the hemming and hawing and weeping and gnashing of teeth about the state retirement system, the payments are being made according to the law that was passed back in 1995, and they going out as they should because the law requires it. It says it doesn't matter if there's an appropriation or not. These payments into the retirement systems have to be made. And that's what? That's like $7 billion right off the top.
And Doug,
yeah, and the same thing is true for bond payments too.
Yeah.
But at some point, Charlie, as you've said, or as I think Doug pointed out a few moments ago, at some point there's just not going to be the cash on
hand.
Oh
yeah, and that's going to be the critical thing. And so the question for the comptroller will be, do I go against what the statute says, or do I go against what some federal court has told me I have to do, or do I go against the ruling from the judge down in St. Clair County that we have to pay state workers' salaries?
And Doug, can you clarify a little bit here? I've seen this on social media a lot. A lot of people are saying, hey, I'm paying my taxes. What are they doing with all that money? They say they can't pay the bills. Can you explain just briefly why that is the case, why the state could be running out of money to pay these things, even though they're collecting all this revenue?
The essential thing is the state income tax rolled back a couple of years ago, as it was planned to do, but the spending didn't go back. So we're still paying bills as if we had all this additional, or running up bills, I should say, as if we had all this additional tax money coming in, but we don't. And if your household income is $50,000 a year, and you spend $200,000 or run up bills at $200,000, you're very shortly going to be in trouble, and that's where the state is at.
Yeah, and I would recommend, if everyone's interested in it, there was an article in Chicago Magazine. You can get it on their website, I think this past week, by Amanda Cass. The headline was, Why Illinois' Non-Budget is Actually the Worst Budget Ever. So it's counterintuitive, but by not passing a budget, we're actually spending more than we probably would be if we had a budget, just because so much of these payments are just kind of on autopilot, as Doug was saying.
Brian, I'm going to turn to you. A couple of minutes here left in the show. I wanted to mention a political news that happened this week, and this involved J.B. Pritzker, and go all the way back to the former governor, Rod Blagojevich. What was this all about?
Yeah, the Tribune, which obviously covered extensively the Blagojevich corruption allegations, as did most other media in the state. But they say they went back through there and found some tape from Blagojevich in which these are the FBI wiretaps of the governor, the same ones in which the FBI says the governor was trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. So this is late 2008. Obama has been elected president. He's president-elect at this point. Blagojevich has taken a lot of calls. One of them was from a guy named J.B. Pritzker, who was a big fundraiser for Rod Blagojevich. He had heard a rumor that then-Illinois Treasurer Alexei Giannoulias was going to be appointed to the Obama administration, and he wanted to be – Pritzker was interested in Blagojevich possibly naming him state treasurer. Blagojevich kind of says, boy, it'd be great if you could do for me what you did for Lisa a little while ago, kind of obliquely referring to some campaign donations that Pritzker had made. Pritzker does seem to try to steer Blagojevich away from that sort of talk and say, I don't think while we're, I'm paraphrasing here from memory, but, I don't think while we're talking about a job, I should be talking about that sort of thing. But it certainly doesn't look good that you were asking the now imprisoned former governor for a job, within a week or so before he was arrested for trying to sell public office.
And we're going to hear a lot about this, I'm sure, coming up in the campaign. I would think that you're going to use that, anything with Rod Blagojevich that you can, against J.B. Pritzker. I would think he should be prepared for that.
Yeah, there's a picture of him next to Blagojevich. I haven't seen whether it's authentic or photoshopped. It looked like a pretty natural picture. I'm sure that's something we'll be seeing a lot more of. I mean, he's a guy who's been a player in Democratic politics in Illinois for a long time. He's a very wealthy guy and a fundraiser and donor. And so, you get to know people, and those are relationships are certainly going to be exploited by his opponents in the campaigns.
Going to turn now to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, one significant bill that passed that had did have bipartisan support and little or no opposition was a measure that would bring automatic voter registration to the state of Illinois. It would change the current registration laws so that whenever an eligible Illinois resident applies for a driver's license or state ID, or a hunting license or a fishing license, or applies for services at the Department of Human Services, they would be automatically registered to vote unless they choose not to. And the estimate is that this would add maybe upwards of a million more eligible voters to the registry polls.
And it sounds like the governor plans to sign that?
Yeah, he had vetoed an earlier one. He wanted certain changes made, and the sponsors made the changes, and he said that he will sign it in its modified form when it reaches his desk.
All right. Doug Finke?
The legislature also passed a bill to make the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum a standalone state agency, pulling it away from the Historic Preservation Agency, where it's been ever since it was built. Governor Rauner had already issued an executive order to do this. The idea behind the legislation is it locks it into law so a future governor couldn't easily reverse this.
All right, and Brian Mackey?
Yeah, people like to say with no budget, what has the legislature been doing? Well, they did pass 492 bills this session, by my count. One of those deals with seafood fraud. Apparently, I didn't know any of this, but there's a Vietnamese fish known as bassa or swai. It's been sold in America as catfish. Apparently, Congress outlawed that for sort of retail sales more than a decade ago. This Illinois law, or I should say Illinois legislation, if the governor signs it into law, would ban restaurants from selling Vietnamese swai fish as catfish. So people say there's no such thing as bipartisanship in Springfield. I think the Truth in Seafood Labeling Bill proves them wrong.
That's good to know. And also the legislature approving a school funding change would deal with the state's inequitable school funding formula. We'll talk about that in coming weeks. There has been a parliamentary hold put on that, though, so it won't be going to the governor, at least immediately. That will do it for State Week for this week. The members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us at NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.